From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the Nepal quake death toll on the rise, clashes in Nigeria's plateau state, post-riot calm brings end to the curfew in the U.S. city of Baltimore, plus some sad news from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Four more people have been rescued from underneath the rubble days after the April 25th earthquake in Nepal. Nepalese officials are saying more than 7,000 people have died and thousands are still missing. The victims were remembered during a vigil in Kathmandu, the capital, over the weekend. Nila Shrestha is a resident of the capital.
We are praying for those who passed away in the earthquake and wanted to light candles to commemorate those who were,
Thousands of survivors are urging the government there to move more quickly to provide essentials such as food and water to people displaced by the quake. Those distributing the aid are also appealing for more help as well. Ertharin Cousin is executive director of the World Food Program. She is in Nepal.
We definitely need more helicopters. This is an area where, particularly in these early days of the response, and even 7 days in, this is still very much considered the early days, because there are people who we haven't yet reached. So we need helicopters in order to reach them.
And the UN Humanitarian Affairs Chief Valerie Amos met with Nepalese officials after visiting devastated areas there, later telling reporters that emergency funding for relief efforts are streaming into the country and urging the international community to increase that support. World Health Organization and its partners are among the groups in Nepal to help the people recover from the quake. Paul Garwood is with the WHO in Kathmandu. He spoke with VOA's Jota Kapwa about the crisis.
In terms of health, the earthquake has had a major impact on health facilities in the country of Nepal. It's displaced many people, so put them in precarious conditions health-wise. And it's caused, of course, the need for there to be a huge influx of national, international aid in terms of medical supplies and medical professionals to respond to the great health needs. And these health needs, they include treating the many injured people. More than 14,000 people are estimated to have been injured in this emergency, including many people with broken bones, fractures, crush syndrome, as well as the displacement of people has put them at great risk of contracting communicable diseases such as diarrheal diseases and acute respiratory infections. So the main health concerns that we see are these, along with the disruption and often the damage and in some cases destruction of hospitals and clinics and other health facilities in the most affected districts of the country.
So what is the WHO and its partners doing to try to deal with these problems?
But one thing we're doing is coordinating, bringing together health professionals from all over the world, whether they be foreign medical teams, expert in emergency response to these kind of health emergencies, and non-governmental organizations, expert in delivering health care in humanitarian situations. We brought them together as part of the Foreign Medical Team Initiative and the Health Cluster Initiative. And so we're trying to ensure that healthcare is as available and widely available in as many locations as possible. So that coordination role is key, always in support of the government here of Nepal. Bringing in medical supplies is a key role that WHO is playing. At the moment, we've brought in medical supplies that could treat more than 120,000 people for the next 3 months, and more supplies are arriving in Kathmandu. We'll see extra diarrheal disease medicines brought in, along with other equipment, including medical tents. Another key thing we're doing is keeping a close eye on the health situation in general. WHO issued its first rapid health assessment within the first week of the earthquake. It's been a major undertaking where WHO staff and Ministry of Health staff have gone into all the main affected districts of the country to assess how badly the health system has been affected and how well those hospitals and clinics that are still standing are functioning. And we had some great results. We saw that in many districts there is still a functioning health system, whether it's at clinic level or hospital level. We see that the government has sufficient aid in terms of medical staff available to deliver the care needed. So there's abundant medical professionals from the country and from internationally who are here in Nepal to help. The main need the government of Nepal has in these medical facilities to have continuing medical supplies, replenishment of supplies, IV fluids, diarrheal disease medicines, insulin, all essential emergency medicines plus medicines needed for routine care. So WHO's role is to ensure the continual stocking of that medical supply chain to ensure that hospitals and clinics around the country are able to continue treating people.
That is Paul Garwood. He is with the World Health Organization in Nepal's capital, Kathmandu. He was speaking with my colleague, Joe DiCapua. You can stay on top of the news out of Nepal at our website, voanews.com. And you can also follow our correspondent on the ground in Nepal. Steve Herman's Twitter handle is W7VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
In Iberia on Sunday, a military spokesman said soldiers clashed with suspected tribal militia in the rest of Central Plateau State on Friday and Saturday. Reports indicate dozens of people have been killed and scores of homes razed following the deaths and mutilations of six soldiers by suspected tribal militiamen. Associated Press quotes one community leader as saying at least 38 people were killed. He said the soldiers stormed tribal villages and many lives of men, women, and children were lost. He says hundreds have been made homeless. Plateau State has been plagued for years by ethno-religious violence over land use between Christian farmers and mainly Muslim semi-nomadic cattle herders that had reportedly left thousands dead. Meanwhile, hundreds of kidnapped women and girls are receiving assistance at a Nigerian refugee camp following their rescue from camps in the Sambisa forest in the country's northeast, where they were being held by the Boko Haram militants. The National Emergency Management Agency's Charles Odogabe says the group of 275 was taken to Malkohno camp in Yola province to receive medical care, food, and trauma counseling.
We are still in the process of sorting them out, but we can tell you that majority of them are children. But they are mostly, they are all women and children, but the majority are children.
They are a part of nearly 700 people released by the military from the radical Sunni group in the past week. Camp officials said many are being treated for critical malnourishment and 21 others are receiving care for gunshot wounds and fractured limbs. Ruth Ogwu is a volunteer for the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF.
This baby is malnourished because I've been in the forest for past 6 months now. And there is no food, no enough water for them to take. So as you can see very well now, the baby is very malnourished, critical. So all we have to do now is to take the records of those who are malnourished in the camp. From there, we admit them. We give them the necessary medications.
Dr. Mohamed Amin Suleiman is Director of Rescue, Relief, and Rehabilitation for the Adamawa State Emergency Management Agency.
Even those that were able to escape on their own from their houses, they must have some, psychological defects. Not to talk of those that were in captivity for some months. Their condition is so terrible. That is why we are mobilizing a lot of psychosocial teams.
Officials say they are trying to determine where the women and children are from and saying that they do not appear to be from the group of 200 schoolgirls kidnapped last year in Chibok. Hundreds more migrants, most of them Africans, were rescued Sunday in the Mediterranean off the Libyan coast, a day after nearly 3,700 were saved by the Italian Coast Guard and Navy from smugglers' boats. Tens of the migrants were found dead from drowning over the past 2 days. All of those rescued were ferried to Italian ports, with some arriving on Italy's southernmost island, Lampedusa, and others taken to Sicily and Calabria. Italy says that mild weather and calm seas are expected to push the number of migrant arrivals to 200,000 this year, 30,000 more than in 2014. Europe is struggling to deal with the flood of people trying to reach its shores. Hundreds of migrants, mostly African, but also many Syrians escaping the war at home, and every day are landing on the Italian coast after being rescued by the Italian Navy or the Coast Guard. Following a series of shipwrecks that killed more than 1,200 people in April, European leaders at an April the 23rd summit agreed to strengthen the EU presence at sea, deciding to triple the previously $3.4 million a month funding for the operation run by the Frontex border agency. The United Nations has denied trying to cover up allegations of sexual abuse of children by French soldiers in the Central African Republic. It says a senior UN official suspected of leaking a confidential report has been suspected for having breached rules aimed at protecting the young victims. Lisa Schlein has details.
The UN Human Rights Office says it is constrained by what it can say because two investigations are underway. UN spokesman Rupert Colville says the first and most important investigation is being conducted by French authorities. He says the probe into extremely serious allegations of sexual abuse of children by French soldiers in the Central African Republic was started last year on July 31st.
The allegations of what happened to these children are abhorrent.
14 soldiers reportedly are charged with demanding sexual favors from young boys in return for food. They were part of a larger French peacekeeping force sent to the CAR to help restore order after fighting erupted in December 2013. Soldiers from Chad and Equatorial Guinea also are implicated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Tel Aviv, several thousand people from Israel's Jewish-Ethiopian community protested Sunday against what they call racism and police brutality. Some protesters blocked roads and threw rocks and bottles at police, who responded with stun grenades, pepper spray, and water cannon. A number of the demonstrators were arrested. Not all the protesters were Ethiopian. Dr. Gadi Ben Ezer was among them.
The discrimination of Ethiopians is going on everywhere, and you have to stop it for our sake, not for the Ethiopian people's sake alone. It's us, it's not them.
An estimated 135,000 Ethiopian Jews live in Israel, having immigrated in two waves in 1984 and 1991. They say they've struggled to integrate into Israeli society despite large government assistance. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reportedly plans to meet with members of the Ethiopian community later today. Journalist in Burundi marked World Press Freedom Day by gathering in the capital, Bujumbura, Sunday to condemn recent moves by authorities to curtail their freedoms. The gathering follows last week's police raid of police union offices. Authorities shut down a popular private radio station, Public Radio Africa, in the capital and cut transmission lines of two others. Alexandra Yungeko is chairman of the Burundi Union of Journalists.
The press freedom is now under attack, you know, by different measures taken by the government. Now we have one radio which is now closed since 1 week, the RPA. We have two radio which cover all the country, but now they have cut the, you know, their lines, which is unacceptable.
President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term, that is, sparked street protests last week that left at least five people dead. Critics of the president say a third term would violate the country's constitution. Togo's constitutional court on Sunday made it official that President Faure Gnassingbé has won a third five-year term, taking about 59% of the vote to about 35% for the opposition challenger Jean-Pierre Fabre. The win extends the rule of the Gnassingbé family to nearly half a century. Faure Gnassingbé has been in power since 2005, succeeding his father, Gnassingbé Eyadema, who died after 38 years in office. The opposition indicated Friday it would not challenge the April 25th election results, although it claims the vote was rigged and the court serves the government. European Union said the election went off calmly, confirming the Togolese people's attachment to democracy. Both the African Union and the regional bloc ECOWAS say the vote was free and transparent. Also in the news, Human Rights Watch says it has credible evidence that the Saudi-led coalition has used outlawed U.S.-supplied cluster bombs in Yemen. The bombs are built to explode in midair and spread smaller bombs across a large area that can pose a grave danger to civilians. Saudi military officials deny using cluster bombs. The mayor of the U.S. city of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, has ended the citywide overnight curfew as protesters there held another rally Sunday night against police violence outside of City Hall. Baltimore was in turmoil last week after the funeral for Freddie Gray, the African-American man who died last month while in police custody. Baltimore State's Attorney's Office has charged six police officers involved in Gray's arrest with crimes ranging from manslaughter to murder. Prosecutors say Gray was arrested for no reason and that officers ignored his pleas for medical help. The police union says it will challenge the charges.
Visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
And we have some sad news from the world of music. First, Benny King, the lead singer for the Drifters, who sang so many timeless hits with the group and out on his own, has died. He was 76. The Drifters, with King writing and singing, produced a string of some of the greatest hits in the heyday of the R&B era, including This Magic Moment, with King singing the lead.
Sweeter than wine, softer than the summer night. Everything I want, I have. Whenever I hold you tight, this magic moment, while your lips are close to mine, will last forever. Forever till the end of time. Oh, magic moment, magic moment, magic moment. Oh,
yeah, just one of many, many hits for the Drifters, and of course, Benny King. He'll be missed. And we've learned that the great blues man B.B. King is in home hospice care. That according to his official website. It appears the world might be about to lose one of the greatest voices and, of course, guitarist of that original American art form, the blues. Many consider B.B.'s song, Why I Sing the Blues, among his very best. Everybody, for tuning in to the Voice of America today for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. A reminder, the Top Row News is straight ahead. Hope you'll stay tuned for that. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Monday. Now more of B.B. King's Why I Sing the Blues.
I'm laid in a ghetto flat, cold and numb. I heard the rats tell the bedbugs to give the roaches some. Everybody wanna know why I'm singing the blues. Yes, I've been around a long time.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the run-up to World Press Freedom Day, the Department of State highlighted the cases of several journalists around the world who are being silenced because they exercise their fundamental right to free expression and spoke truth to power. From Syria, the State Department cited the imprisonment of three important human rights and free expression activists who remained imprisoned by the brutal regime of President Bashar al-Assad, Mazen Darwish, Hana Zitani, and Hussein Gharir. Mazen Darwish is the director of the Syrian Center for Media and Freedom of Expression, a non-governmental organization he founded that specializes in promoting freedom of expression and that also played a key role in disseminating information about daily developments in Syria, including the atrocities committed by the Assad regime. Mr. Darwish and his two colleagues were arrested at their office by regime security forces in February 2012. The three men were held for 2 years without charge and an additional year without trial after charges were filed. Their trial on the spurious charge of promoting terrorist acts has been postponed 22 times. The prison conditions in Syria are abominable, with torture and abuse rampant in regime-run detention centers, as has been well documented, including by the 55,000 photographs smuggled out of the country in 2013 by a former Syrian army photographer who goes by the alias Caesar. U.S. State Department acting spokesperson Marie Harf called for the immediate release of Mazen Darwish, Hani Sitani, and Hussein Gharir, arrested and detained for exercising their human rights. She also called on the Assad regime to release all arbitrarily detained journalists and political prisoners who are currently suffering horrific conditions and are at risk of abuse and torture in the prisons.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.